guys, we know you like to listen to our podcasts and reviews. We know generally that you like to listen to stuff. How about listening to stuff on Audible?
Well, Audible, isn't that what we do?
Well, I mean, we do Audible reviews, but I'm talking about Audible.com. I mean, you're talking about one of the internet's best resources for audio programs from leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazine and newspaper publishers, and even business information providers.
Like over 150,000 audio programs, adding up to over 1,500,000 hours of audio programming. I don't think we're quite there yet.
No.
Yeah, but
we'll get there.
But, you know, obviously you guys like audio. You're looking for new audio stuff to check out. Audible.com has more than enough of what you're looking for.
And we're proud to call them a sponsor. And as a special gift to you, we're offering you, through Audible, a free audiobook. All you have to do is click on the link on the bottom of this page, or you can go to audibletrial.com/oneofus. And by doing so, not only do you get a free audiobook, but you're helping out the site as well.
And we know you want to do that.
Of course you want to do that.
Because we're standing outside your window watching you right now, wanting to do that.
Absolutely. So stop, look, and most importantly, listen to audible.com.
Welcome back to Geeks at Large now. That's what we are.
Right? Are we?
That's what we are.
Like, I thought I was in the woods still, and yet here I am sitting in front of my computer, being like sensei'd to death. But yeah, I guess we are at large.
Yeah, we are. I mean, don't look at the Facebook page because it's still Geeks at College because Facebook has really shitty policies about changing your name. It's a work in progress, folks.
Oh, wait, did we email them or something?
I sent a document, but it's got, like, a lengthy process, so... Eventually, it will say...
Bureaucracy.
We'll get it to say Geeks at Large. But we got, you know...
Maybe the at symbol this time, too.
No, we can't.
I know. That's wishful thinking on my end.
Basically, but... Hey, we got the new cover photo, we got a new profile picture, we got... Our first episode that went up, and that was super successful.
Super successful.
I think that was probably our most successful episode since the Dark Knight Rises episode, the five-hour epic that I'll always bring up, even though Casey will be like, don't ever bring that up again.
Wait, why does he not want you to bring
that
up again?
Just because of how long and it was, but... Oh, man.
I thought that's the audience we catered to, but okay.
Oh, you know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
But anyway, I'm Taylor, and I'm joined by...
Oh, it's me, Chris.
Chris is here.
Yeah, back from the dead.
Young Christopher Ryan.
Yeah.
What was the last episode you were on?
The last episode was like the second to last Geeks at College, where me and Casey kind of really went over what we were excited for in film. Mm-hmm. And most of the stuff that when I like brought up to him he wasn't excited for, I was really shocked by.
That's kind of how Casey is nowadays.
Oh, no, I love it because it makes us different and stand out from each other. But at the same time, I'm just like, wow.
Trust me, that's not very hard, Chris.
That's really what you think of Jurassic World? Okay.
What does he say about Jurassic World?
Oh, that he's just afraid about how it's not really going to be what everyone's expecting it to be.
Well, as we're recording this, they just released a new trailer and it looked pretty cool.
Oh, I haven't seen it, so I really can't judge.
It's stupid, but it's Jurassic Park. Like, honestly,
Jurassic Park is pretty stupid.
Like, it's stupid, but it's fun. Stupid. It's fucking dinosaurs,
and it has a heart. And like, honestly, like if it's stupid but it has a heart, like then it will get itself across.
Because it's the science is awful and stupid. It doesn't make any sense, but you don't care because dinosaurs.
Yeah. Dinosaurs are back, you guys.
I mean, there's some stupid stuff, like, why would they make a giant dinosaur, like, stronger than a T-Rex? But, you know, whatever.
Why would they make dinosaurs from frog DNA when frogs can change, genders pretty easily if there's, like, a lack of one gender?
Mm-hmm.
you know, the big fucking, like, scientists know this shit in Jurassic Park?
They'll take one for the team and grow a dick.
Or grow a badge if it came down to that. A vagine.
But anyway, we actually are here to talk shop, right?
Yeah,
because
let's shock top.
Because I wanted to talk to Chris about, you know, what he's working on. You're taking time off from school, right?
Yeah, I'm coming around the end of my time off from school. I'm coming back in the fall, and I'm going to be pretty much hammering out my senior thesis all the remaining time I got left. I'm currently, like, doing a couple other filler projects just so that my reel / resume is bolstered up with a lot more director credits.
Yeah, because what we're trying to do here with Geeks at Large to separate a bit from Geeks at College is that we're going to talk a bit more about our professional pursuits, so to speak. You know, Chris and Casey with working in film, both, you know, you want to be more behind the camera. Casey's a writer.
Yeah, really. But I'll still write with him if
he
asks or I, like, beg him.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll help.
Well, no, because it's pretty much what it's been boiled down to. It was, like, for my senior anyway, like, he's been helping me, like, do some homework on it, basically. Or give me homework to do on it. And it's been to my advantage, honestly, because every time I've done that, it's always, like, made the scripts better.
Well, yeah, and Casey knows his shit, man. I mean,
no, he really does now. It's kind of funny. Like, it all used to be where he wasn't really, like, sure of what he wanted to do. And then I, like, gave him this weird-ass speech in freshman year. And now he's, like, doing better than I will ever do.
Better than any of us will ever do.
Yeah, because I'm just like, bruh. Like, did I give you my god powers that I had for that one little brief moment of time? Because holy fuck.
You're like Halle Berry in Die Another Day, where she transfers her Oscar-nominated powers to
Rosamund Pike.
Rosamund Pike.
I feel like it sometimes.
I mean, that to become a thing. That needs to become a thing.
You're right. It does need to be a thing. Like, we just need to make some memes.
Yeah, like that should
be a
meme.
Make a bunch of shit memes that I will probably do at like 4 a.m. one day and just put them at the quote Geeks at Large Facebook page.
Yeah.
And it'll take off.
Yeah.
Like how the meme of me took off.
Holy shit. That's the real, like, business venture you've been on is your stupid meme.
Dude, my stupid meme. My stupid meme has just been, like, insanity.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that at all?
I guess. Like, I was fucking doing photos for the show and the other... Because I do concert photography from time to time just to, like, get my skill up and to, like, you know, get better with using cameras. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like my zen mode. I don't really put up a lot of it, as most of the people that I take photos of will attest to. But I genuinely, like, try to at least have the photos. And then at some point, probably this summer, I will, like, finish all the shit that I've had to do for, like, years now. But yeah, beyond that, the other concert photographer at that show, just like, she's a kind of photographer that will just capture the moment and just take photos for the entire duration, which is really great because in Savannah venues, they don't have a 3-song cap where you're not allowed to do photos from the photo pit,
mm-hmm.
like after a certain point. So you can just shoot whenever. And she caught that beautiful moment, I think, like after I like, found a really good ghost imaging shot I did or some bullshit, and the lead singer of the band, the guy pointing at me, like, found it, put it up on his own page, and then a friend of mine, like, just linked me to it, and then the guy who put the photo up on his Facebook page basically reached out to me. It was like, hey, I'm gonna put this up on the band's page, like, I just want to make sure if it's okay with you, like, if we do this. And I literally said this, as uh-huh. far back as I could remember, I've always wanted to be a meme. And he was just like, perfect answer. Because, like, honestly, after being a meme, it's just like, if that's really going to happen to you and you're, like, scared of the backlash, like, honestly, just jump on it and, like, own it. Because there's nothing more that will take people that really don't like you to try and, you know, bring you down harder than you owning something that could totally have been spat back in your face.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's really been my little interesting meme event that I am now a meme.
There you go.
I guess.
You've achieved immortality.
I have achieved immortality as far as the internet is concerned.
Oh my god.
It's not like Fountain of Youth shit yet. Like, I'm not Bad Luck Brian, but like...
Yeah. Or like Overly Attached Girlfriend or...
Yeah.
I'm just, or my Gerd Gerd Burps Girl.
I'm just a sub of a sub of a sub meme.
But anyway,
but yeah, and back to more professional matters.
What other projects do you have coming down the pipe?
We're currently finishing up I Am Macbeth. Picture Lock is happening this week. We just finished some awesome reshoots.
So what is
that? I'm really over the moon over.
So can you tell me much about that project?
I Am Macbeth is basically a community theater adaptation of Macbeth, in which an understudy for the lead in Macbeth is so obsessed with getting the lead role back that he starts killing off the people that the production company is cast as Macbeth.
Oh my god, okay.
So yeah, it's very like silly macabre, and
so it's like really dark humor.
Yeah, dark humor. We're trying to like not necessarily Edgar Wright it up, but add a lot more visual comedy. Because if you've seen not only the stuff that I talked about on the last time I was at Geeks at College with the Every Frame of Painting series, which if you're a filmmaker or like just a fan of film in general, watch that shit because it will help you understand things that you really don't know what you're talking about yet.
Yeah.
Like it is such a beautifully based, simple way to break down everything.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's like, if you know anything about cameras and you have access to that series, like you could run with it basically as a film education.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my whole spin on that. But so yeah, we're just trying to give it more of a visual flair as far as like making shots more humorous. And I think with this reshoot, we definitely added it because the way the film is looking to me right now is like Aronofsky, but funny. And okay, it hasn't really worked yet, but with some of these reshoots, like it's really like coming into its own.
Nice.
So yeah, that's why I kind of like have been delaying the recording of this episode until now.
So like, what are you doing on this specifically?
I am the director.
Oh, hey, look at that.
Yeah, look who fucking grew up. Like, I've been directing this, and as far as the reshoots, I've been the producer of those. So
nice.
I've basically been, yeah, getting the funds to get the reshoot shot up and the locations and stuff. And we definitely did some work for that. And also I, a week before, just did a bunch of time-lapse photography. So hopefully that will be added to my credits.
Nice.
If anything is added to my credits.
If anything.
It's just, I just want my time lapse photography credits.
But you've also been working on like music videos and stuff too, right?
Yeah, I've been finishing music videos more than I say working on them.
Okay. Like, what do you mean by that? I guess
like I have one that's coming out soon. I just don't know when because we need to me and the band project leader need to get in touch so that I could like deliver him the final cut of the video.
Mm-hmm.
And like get his approval on it, and then once that's good to go, that'll be up on his label's YouTube page for when it gets closer to. I will probably just put up on the Geeks at Large Facebook page. And I've been doing a couple other ones for some bands that are not on labels, and the band I manage in town, Pride Meat. Yeah, I've also been doing a lot of band management, which has been kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a really like cheap and kind of lazy music video, but it's going to be funny because it's so cheap and lazy. Because that's okay. The thing. I've noticed a lot of bands have really kind of done a lot of like product, like just performance style music videos where it's just them performing. And like, it's not really all that visually interesting anymore. Like there's only so many ways you can frame a guitarist doing a solo that like before it gets really boring.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've just been trying to like experiment with music video making really. And Pride Meat has been like the catalyst for me to funnel all those ideas into.
Now, do you have like any sort of influences from music videos? Like,
oh yeah, I have a bunch that I think I've mentioned like last time I was on air with Casey. One of the bigger metal music video guys that I really dig is David Brodsky, who is like a master of literally everything. But a lot of his stuff you'll see is more performance based as compared to my other influence, Michael Panduro, who is just a fucking visual genius when it comes to the more concept based music videos where there's no band performing and it's really just like a visualization on the lyrics themselves.
Yeah.
That just time right with the music. And I really want to explore that aspect, to be honest with you, because I think that is a more interesting narrative to go down with metal music, because as I have said many times in the past, metal music videos have been not really all that great or interesting because there's really so much you can do with performance footage and so much what you can do with what these like somewhat independent labels can give you as far as a budget is concerned. So I'd much rather focus on like telling a story with the music rather than having the band play the music.
Right.
And Michael Panduro has really been a guy that's just been all about that shit. And you could watch some of his videos for like Cephalic Carnage's Orworm, which again, these videos are also completely not safe for work. So watch at your own caution, but yeah, Orworm is a really good one. The one he did for Job for a Cowboy's Tarnished Gluttony, where I think I mentioned on that last episode where it's like a guy fucking taking an octopus and putting it inside of a little kid after he's harvested a little kid's organs and then send him out to the sea is like a Cthulhu cultist like realization of the way that money works in politics nowadays. It's just, it's whacked, but I love it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's really like who I've been kind of influenced on. But another guy that I really think I would like to get to where he has gotten to at his in his career is Sam Baer. And Sam Baer is a lot more of a known music video director. He's done like Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit, My Chemical Romance's videos during the Black Parade, or at least the first two. And he is just such an amazing filmmaker, and I really wish he just did more music videos. And because when they tried to give him a feature, they gave him the remake to Nightmare on Elm Street, and like they just demolished that shit from him.
Oh yeah.
So I'd rather like see him do more of his own stuff with music videos, because that's really where he shines.
Right.
But yeah, that's basically where my head is at as far as influences, and that's really what I would like to do mostly with my life.
Just more specifically music videos, or?
Yeah, more specifically music videos. Like, I'm still kind of probably going to grip a lot because I like doing the grip and electric work, which is basically like doing the lighting and the lighting control for how the set is lit and what the director of photography wants to do as far as camera and lighting. I don't really want to work on a camera team again. I think it's not really that it's super stressful. It's also just like, there's just some aspects of it that like, I feel like just sitting there with camera all the time is just like really wasteful.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like there's so much to do on a film set that, if you're one of those that has worked on a bunch of film sets and you're not really moving all that much, or at least not comfortable with moving all that much, then it's really going to screw with your head.
How so?
Just like thinking that we're behind time because I'm not really doing anything. I'm just like holding the camera.
You don't feel like you're accomplishing much?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Alrighty.
So yeah, that's basically where I've been and just kind of sensing my way before senior year.
It's all good. That's all good. Do you want to talk about your thesis at all, or?
I can't really until like a Kickstarter or some form of it is up online, because I'm just scared that, and this is really funny because I have a friend that never really thought about this, but like, you know, there's some people out there who could be kind of schmucky and take your idea.
Oh yeah, that always happens. But
and I have a friend that I've been working with for a little bit who never known this, and he'd always like just put up on his personal Facebook page like, "Hey, does anybody want to read my script to so and so?" And then I started talking to him about that, and he's just like, "Oh shit!" Like, didn't even notice that, you know, that's, you really got to be careful, like, who you trust on that stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, like, I'd say that there's some comic stuff that you are really not at liberty to talk about because you're just afraid of, like, I really hope that this really good idea I had isn't going to be taken by some guy.
Well, and the thing, and that's, it's funny you bring that up because I've been talking to editors and stuff, and I think I mentioned that in the last episode, but...
No, you did, yeah.
Yeah, and... I like how Chris listened to it, folks, because it's like when you said that, it's like, yeah, I was there. I know.
I was there, guys, just in the background.
You
in Ohio.
Didn't know I was there, but I was there. But
you didn't see me.
You know, I've been talking to editors, and I've had some like family members go like, "Is there like a non-disclosure agreement that you have them sign and stuff?" And then I'm like, I'm pretty sure that editors have like this code of ethics where they can't steal my shit. But fine, I'll make sure and check with one of my professors, and I asked my professor, and he was basically, yeah, they know not to do that because you'd sue their asses off.
Yeah, and comics is not as big as most other industries to where you can have a huge legal team and get away with it, but...
Well, and it's also... Really,
yeah, right, yeah, it is kind of more of a code of ethics.
But it's also the fact that I have so much proof that it's mine, you know?
Yeah.
Because I have all the pages, I have all the inks, I have the script... I have the emails where I sent them the pages, you know, so it's all that kind of stuff. And it's like, you have to do that stuff in order to get your foot in the door. You have to talk to people. You have to give editors your stuff. You know, you can't just be like this paranoid little thing that's like, oh, I can't have anyone steal my ideas, you know?
Yeah, because that's the other thing that I'd like to get into just on this end is just like, yeah, it'd be nice to like, have the ability to just send everyone stuff and not be paranoid of it, but like at the same time, like you never really know.
Well, yeah, and film it's a little differently because you can just make something and put it up, and comics is kind of the same thing, but that's largely for like web comics and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, if you want to get into like actual print stuff and work with a company or a publisher, you have to send them your stuff.
Yeah,
like you just have to. And like, there's statements in submission processes where they say, like, pretty much all of them say, you won't be getting your stuff back, so don't send us originals. You know, send us prints, so because we're going to keep them, so don't give us your original artwork. You know? And, but yeah, it's like, and also the editing world in comics is a lot smaller, I think, than people think.
Well, no, you know? It's like, look at how many, like, publishing companies there are out there, and you'll see, like, that doesn't really cast a wide net. It's just like for like every one company, there's one editor. Like,
well, not necessarily, but there's.
Oh, really?
No, there's more. There's more. Like, Marvel's got plenty of editors. There's editors in chief.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Really, like
you have an editor in chief, but they're just, you know, the head editor, if you will.
Oh, okay.
Like what Joe Quesada was back when he was at and stuff. But
or like how Axel Alonso is that now?
Yeah. I forgot his name, but thank you. But yeah, there's plenty of editors like Boom Studios who, I don't know if you've ever heard of Boom or
no, I've heard of Boom. I like Irredeemable.
Oh yeah, Irredeemable.
I'm not Casey. I like comics.
But I really want to work for them because
no, dude, they'd be great. Like,
well, the real thing that I want to work on with Boom is their Kaboom line where they do. Basically, they have all the licenses for pretty much all Cartoon Network shows.
Yeah, and so that means they don't have the Pixar license anymore?
Probably not, because that would go to Marvel.
Well, yeah, because I know, like, right when fucking Marvel was bought by Disney, like, Boom had Pixar licenses.
Yeah, they had, like, an Incredibles
book. Which
is why they were
making so much on those fucking Cars books.
Yeah, there was Cars, there was Incredibles, I think Toy Story, all kinds of stuff.
And I need to read that Incredibles line.
Well, Boom is a really good, like, license company, too, because they have Planet of the Apes, too.
Their Planet of the Apes stuff has been pretty tight.
Yeah, and they're even doing, I talked about this with Tom last week, but They're doing a big like company crossover with IDW, Star Trek, and Planet of the Apes.
So, that's gonna be cool.
It is really cool. Like, it's already pretty deep in. I think it's like there's at least like 3 or 4 issues, if not more. But yeah, and I don't know. It's just it's all about you have to use like the internet to get, you know, you have to take the plunge into the internet if you want to get your stuff out there, whether it be email or like with you guys putting stuff on Vimeo or YouTube or whatever, you know, anything. And you guys have the thing where, again, you guys, like a filmmaker, you can just make a film and put it up and it's yours. You know, with comics, like I said, like for what I want to do, which isn't necessarily web comics. Not that I have anything against webcomics, it's just that I don't think I could do it.
Because what, just the constant stream of, like, continuous, for like, frames or whatever?
Well, you mean pages?
Yeah, just doing, like, fucking...
Yeah, doing, like, because there's... Granted, there's a lot of pre-production that goes into a webcomic. You want to go into... You want to start a webcomic with at least, like, a month's worth of posts done. And if you do a few posts a week, like 2 or 3... You know, that's 8 or 12 posts a month. And
so basically you just want to have like most of it done so that when you're ready to start publishing it online, like it's not like a fucking race to the sun coming up.
Oh, exactly. That's just how everything works, you know?
Yeah.
And doubly so for webcomics, especially if you get sick, you know, it's like, what if you get sick or what if you want to go on vacation, you know, you got to work ahead. You have to plan. There's a lot of planning that goes into comics and web comics, especially just trying to stay ahead of the curve and stuff. But yeah, and it's just a tricky thing, you know, because if you want to talk to someone in person, you have to go to a convention and a lot of times that costs money and email's free. Internet's not, but email's free.
Yeah. I'm actually thinking about the convention distribution platform for like my senior thesis, because it's going to be somewhat relevant to a geek market, and I feel like if I am there in person to both screen it and like maybe even have a booth, like it would probably benefit me a lot more than say like submitting to like 20 different film festivals and getting a bunch of rejections.
Like, how would you distribute it?
I would talk to probably like a somewhat smaller convention and see what we can do to like fund a screening of it and then like a Q&A panel afterwards. Okay. Yeah, it would take a lot of money on our ends collectively, but that's why I would rather start doing it with smaller conventions.
Yeah.
Because if I do some more narrative filmmaking, like I would like to do a lot of like somewhat science fiction-y stuff, like that film Ex Machina that's coming out pretty soon, like is really something that I feel will be very up my wheelhouse.
Oh yeah. Oh,
as I well mean, as it's... stuff like Chappie and District 9, and I would like to really explore that avenue of filmmaking, of just telling stories about things that are really not from our world but we can make in our world.
Yeah, it's not in our world necessarily. Not to that degree, but it's definitely foreseeable.
Yeah.
It's speculative.
Yeah, speculative science fiction. There you go. That's the term I was looking for.
And I've heard a lot of good things about Ex Machina, and I think it goes wide on the 24th.
Yeah.
So, because I know...
This weekend.
Yeah, this upcoming weekend. But yeah.
Yeah, what a great time to fucking release that film, right? Like, right before The Avengers comes out?
Well, you know, it's coming out a weekend where there's not a whole lot new that
exactly,
weekend.
No, and I feel like that's something that I would also, that I would implore a lot more filmmakers on an independent level to do as well, is to not, like, go up against these bigger releases and find the weak points in the mainstream's, like, release track. Because that way you can push yourself further into like being known.
Does this stem from Winnie the Pooh and Harry Potter debacle?
Okay, you. I didn't think of that, but you did.
Well, I just remember because you're such a good
argument. Because it's like, why go up against that stuff? Like,
was that 2011? That was 2011.
That was 2011. Right? You know, already a pretty stacked year in film. So like, it just mystifies me. But at the same time, there have been like, it's just on the music releases that I've seen, like, if you release stuff like in late November where nothing's coming out because everyone's like just getting ready for like to start the next year of stuff and mm-hmm. just to have that month break of December, like you will see like people will pay attention because no matter what, they're still craving stuff like that's new. It's just, you know, the year's coming to a close. So it would be more advantageous for you to like fucking find the gaps in the mainstream release market to release your stuff rather than to say like all release it on one day. Cause this is what I've been noticing in the music industry is like, A, if they do like month long hyping or like 3 to 4 month long hyping of a release, like they will just start clustering releases together to the point where they're like 10 releases coming out on one day, which I think is stupid. As opposed to doing something more like spacing them out, or what a lot of like the mainstream artists have been doing nowadays, where it's like they fucking announce the album is coming out a week before it comes out.
Yeah.
Because that is how they will get all the freshness of that release to like really stick.
Exactly.
And so that everyone's like scrambling to just fucking get their pre-order in.
Yeah.
Because I think it would be way too risky in the metal industry, but like I've seen it work in the regular music industry. Like it's worked for Death Grips. It's clearly worked for Beyonce because that last album that came out in
span
of a week has started this whole cycle.
Now everyone's doing it.
Like fucking Action Bronson did it. Kendrick did it. I believe Tyler the Creator and Earl Sweatshirt have started doing this. Yeah, it's just like,
didn't Tyler just drop like a new album?
No, he did. Week? Like within a week of releasing that first single.
Yeah. Okay.
It was the craziest thing to me. And it's just like, okay, I think I see what the music industry is trying to do now. And it's kind of smart. It keeps everyone guessing and you're not really sure if it's going to drop. But at the same time, like when it does, it's just everyone's rushing to, if they really support the music the right or that way, buy it immediately. And the relevancy will be at its peak point rather than like dipping.
Right.
And I think we as independent filmmakers should also start doing that, because what the fuck is the point if, you know, if everyone cares when we put out stuff that's just like internet content and not really care when it's actually released. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's just my whole like digital alternative distribution ideas that I'm starting to fiddle with now that I'm getting closer and closer to graduation.
Well, that's just, and it's something that people need to, like, web presence is such an important thing nowadays that people need to, you know, remember.
Yeah, that's why I'm like still debating if I should delete my Facebook page, because it's really going to prove itself in the next couple of years. Like the worth of social media, or still having most social media platforms, because I will still swear this until the day I die. I do not get Twitter and I do not think it works.
I like Twitter in some cases.
Yeah.
Twitter's better with interaction and the occasional advertising of things. Again, like, you know, it's thanks to both Tom and the people that run the Herald Comic Twitter account that we got as much exposure for last episode as we did.
So, which I'm not sure if we will this week, but
probably not. But I always
fingers crossed.
I always make a point to put it on mine. I don't have a shit ton of followers. I have like 96, but yeah. You know, I still get people. And I put stuff on there, whether it's my work or so I can like other people's work. It's more. It's a good way to do quick updates for people that follow you. Like, if you're a writer or a comic artist or an animator or anything, especially if you work in, like, online reviews or something, then you'd be like, bam, here it is, bam, here it is, here's what I'm working on, blah, 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 and you can do it in these quick updates. It's not a good platform for any sort of debate about the injustices of society. Of which there are many, but
everyone else who uses Twitter.
But Jesus fucking Christ, if you want to talk about, you know, Ferguson, do it elsewhere and like make a nice like you know,
like thought
out, not yeah. limited by fucking 140 characters, you know. And granted, I sometimes go on like little rants that span. I think I did like, I went on a little rant about the Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, you haven't done like one of those Patton Oswalt rants as far as I've seen. Like when I was on Twitter yesterday for like 5 minutes, like I just saw you being like, oh, Cleveland. Yay, Cleveland sports. Like,
oh, yeah, because
that's it.
Like I have phases where I'll do something really geeky and nerdy and then I'll do sports stuff. Well, because it was the playoffs yesterday, man. Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, I guess.
But
is LeBron back on?
Oh, hell yeah, he is. He's on the right team now, so that's what matters.
Oh, I thought you hated him because...
I hated him because he was on the wrong team. No, I hated him because he left.
God, you flip-flopping sports fans. Jesus.
Well, hey, I won a fucking championship. Thank you very much.
So, oh, okay.
I'm just saying, Cleveland hasn't won a sports championship in 50 fucking years, so... You know, I want one.
Yeah, but I feel you.
Yeah, but, you know...
Especially being from New York teams that suck.
Well, like yeah, Jets. But I mean, were you a Yankees fan growing up?
Yeah, you bet.
Well, see, there you go. You have a fucking team that has how many goddamn pennants?
No. I'm talking the Jets, really.
Oh, well, the Jets had one, but like...
Joe Namath. That's the one my dad sees and the one that still gives him hope.
Well, see, there you go. And you guys went to the playoffs. He just retweeted me. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's also a fun little God, Chris, stop like favoring my tweets. Thank you. Okay.
I was looking for the Batman versus Superman one you did because it's gonna be relevant a little bit.
Well, the Wonder Woman, the Wonder Woman thing. Because for those who don't know,
was she in the trailer?
No, she's not in the trailer. I made a point because I went on a bit of a rant on Facebook because we were talking about Batman versus Superman and how even in because. Batman vs. Superman is supposed to be a fucking Man of Steel sequel, right?
That was apparently.
Apparently. I mean,
did you see when they made DC Universe's official announcement of films that, like, there's a Man of Steel 2?
That's the thing that fucking pissed me off. It's like, dude, you're already following up Man of Steel with this story. It's following up threads. Which is the one thing I actually like about it, is that it's following up the whole destruction of... you know, Metropolis and shit, and it's like, oh, now people are having, like, a crisis of faith with Superman, like, can we trust this guy? And it feels realistic, and it's an interesting thread to go on, but then it just kind of, like, smashes into the brick wall that is Batman, you know? And it's like...
Dude, he is a brick wall!
Because it's just like, oh, great, it's just a Batman
basically,
movie.
Like, just, like, the concept of throwing Batman together with Superman is just a brick wall. Of fucking nerds just being like, oh my god, it's Batman. Oh my god.
Well, the problem is that
Superman. Excuse me, can we just like not do this? Like, that's really me being a nerd, but
yeah,
just fucking let's not and say we did.
Well, the problem is that DC and Warner Brothers can't go like apparently more than, you know, a movie without Batman in it, you know?
No, they really can't.
We had like, The Dark Knight Rises. We had Man of Steel, which, you know, which as divisive as it was, it didn't have Batman in it. So in a way, it was kind of refreshing like that.
Yeah, even Green Lantern was refreshing because it didn't have fucking Batman anywhere near it.
Yeah, and it's like, trust me, I love Batman, but the dude's so fucking overexposed nowadays as a character. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
it's getting annoying, honestly.
And I always put it as like, Batman is like Marsha Brady.
Batman.
And like Superman's obviously Jan. And then I'm afraid that Wonder Woman's going to be like the homeless, like stepchild that lives down the street or some shit, you know, Cousin Oliver. Like,
dude, Cousin Oliver was a homeless stepchild.
No, but I don't want Wonder Woman to be Cousin Oliver, you know, like treated like pizza shit.
It's like,
and that's why I put out that tweet, because I was like, so for Wonder Woman 75th, which is next year, by the way, 2016, can we have something other than just her first film appearance, quote-unquote, a.k.a. a glorified cameo? Because that's all we've been told. I don't know how much she's going to be in Dawn of Justice. I mean, part of me doesn't...
It looks like it's really not going to be that much.
Well, if you're... Because the thing is, like, yeah, it's overcrowded. The problem is that you have these people that are, you know... again, like they're pointing out hypocrisy, quote unquote, about how Marvel fans are fine with stuff like Civil War and Avengers and whatever having so many characters, but with Batman versus Superman, it's like it's also crowded. You know, that's one of the main
differences. Is like Marvel actually like takes their time with this nonsense, and DC is just like doing the thing that both the companies have been guilty of over their entire existences of just fucking like, okay, whatever they're doing, we got to do it as well. Come on, come on. We just got to move it.
Well, like, they're just trying to catch up here. That's all they're doing.
Yeah, it's like, and it's really gross.
I wouldn't be against this movie if it was made like 5 years from now or something, you know?
Yeah.
Or more. I don't know.
And yes. when it would be more tasteful to do this shit.
Well, because, you know, Avengers took 4 years to get to. From Iron Man 1 to Avengers 1. It took 4 years. You know, literally 2 years. Or is it three? No, it's two.
It's exactly two.
No, wait. It's three. It's three.
Including what?
Three from Man of Steel to, it's not quite three. It's like 2.5.
Oh, you know? Now it's three. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 2.5. But we haven't had any films in between to kind of help introduce. We haven't had a Wonder Woman movie. We haven't had
an Aquaman or a Wonder Woman or.
Or even.
The oddly proposed. Yeah, I still don't get why it's going to happen Cyborg movie.
Well, you know.
I'm sorry. I love Cyborg as a Teen Titan. As a Justice League member, I think he's fucking useless.
Well, because, I mean, it's almost like making like a Starfire movie or a Raven movie where it's like what we like about him and those characters that they're part of a team. So they kind of help with each other. But
they're part of a good team that like shouldn't be fucked with as far as lineup is concerned.
But before we get too off topic, my whole point is,
when we get on nerd tangents,
it's like I kind of compared Superman's 75th versus Batman's 75th, which were a year apart. You know, last year was Batman's 75th, and 2013, and 2013 was Superman's. So,
they didn't do shit for Batman's.
What's it?
They didn't do shit for Batman.
Hell yes, they did. They had a fucking Batman Day. There was...
Oh my god, there was a Batman Day?
Yeah, it was like in June or July. There was a box set released of like all of his like seminal classic comics. There was, like, you remember Arkham Knight that's supposed to come out? That was supposed to come out last year.
On Batman year.
Yeah, during Batman year. And there was all sorts of shit at like Hot Topic and whatever.
Well, that's fucking Hot Topic.
But it's still something. No, you know what I mean?
Still something.
Yeah, and there was like releases of like animated shorts, and there was like a movie or two. There was like a new cartoon that didn't last very long at all.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the other thing is like fucking the DC animated universe, which I will always say is stronger than whatever Marvel does on the animated front. Like that's me being like, okay, DC, you win this one. Like, you really need to get away from fucking Superman and Batman now. Like, this is getting gross. Like, the fact that you have all these other unused characters just kind of sitting there is starting to bother me a little bit.
How about, like, I want something more like, I want, like, a solo series with, I don't know, like, I don't know, Wonder Woman or fucking anything, you know? Even at least Batman Brave and the Bold, there was...
You know, the team-ups.
The team-ups. So you got to see, like, especially very underrated characters that a lot of people didn't know about.
Fucking Mr. Music Meister.
Yeah, the Music Meister and shit. Played awesomely by Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris, of all people.
But my point is like, and for Superman 75th, Superman got, as far as I can tell, a super divisive movie that a lot of people don't like.
Yeah.
A little animated short that kind of chronicles the history of him.
Yeah.
As a character, which is cool. It was really well done, but it's like, that's it. You know, there wasn't a fucking box set or any shit. And I'm worried that Wonder Woman's not going to get anything. Because Wonder Woman's fucking awesome. Like, come on, man. It's like, give us something. Give us something besides, she appears
Wonder Woman's awesome. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's just fucking, it's just DC being like completely not focused anymore. Because remember, like, when Blackest Night was coming out and how, like, awesome the company was doing?
Oh, yeah.
And how they haven't really, like, done that well since?
Well, because now, it's basically the New 52 pretty much threw a wrench into everything.
Yeah, and even the New 52, like, didn't really do that as well as Blackest Night did.
Well, yeah.
Company, anyway.
Well, Blackest Night was this huge crossover.
Yeah. One of the best crossovers of the last decade, honestly, if you want my opinion on it.
Well, because people are just so sick of crossovers in comics. That's what's ridiculous about it. But, you know, it's like now, it's like then we had, Flashpoint, and now we're going to have Secret Wars with Marvel, and there's going to be...
Why are we doing another Secret Wars?
I don't know, because they want to merge shit. I don't know.
It's stupid.
Oh, well. Marvel,
it's stupid.
As far as I'm concerned, Marvel's doing pretty solidly.
They're still doing better than DC, but you know, Spider-Man is still a child. At least Peter Parker is still a child.
Oh well, there you go. But yeah. Hey man, at least you have Milo Miles
until Joe Quesada gets the fuck out.
You at least have Miles Morales if you wanna read Spider-Man. Plus, you have Spider-Gwen.
No.
Come on, Spider-Gwen's cool. I like Spider-Gwen.
No.
Yes.
Yeah, alright.
And Howard the Duck. Howard the Duck is a good comic.
Dude, I'm still waiting to get my a copy of Howard the Duck.
Dude, Howard the Duck is super fucking funny.
That's the one thing that bummed me out is that, like, I wasn't home long enough to fucking pick up Howard the Duck or the new Marvel Star Wars stuff.
Oh, yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, anywho.
To transition from the professional stuff, and now that we went on a little tangent there, we're going to talk a bit about, like, to keep it kind of relevant to what Chris and I do, we're going to talk a little bit about adaptations and how it relates to two recent, one a returning series and one a new debut series
It's something I've been waiting for a very long time.
In Game of Thrones Season 5 and Daredevil on Netflix, respectively. So.
Yeah.
And we're all caught up on both, I believe, right?
Yeah, I watched the second episode of the fifth season with my newly finished Three-Eyed Raven Ale from Armagang Brewery.
Awesome.
They have been killing it on the Game of Thrones beers.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think the Valar Morghulis one they did for last season is kind of just okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of molasses aftertaste, and I'm not really a fan of molasses.
Molasses.
But the Three-Eyed Raven's a dark saison, and it is earthy and lovely and perfection.
Nice.
But the one that I've been really looking for, though, is the Take the Black Imperial, because I just love Imperials and the coffee flavoring and, mm-hmm. you know, being a Night's Watch member. But that's just a whole nother nerd subject. But adaptations. I don't know. Like, the first episode of the new season really lost me for, like, 5 minutes.
Of Game of Thrones?
Yeah, just, like, trying to catch back up to everything.
Well, and it's funny because now they have these, like, previously on Game of Thrones. And then
Yeah, now it's like, oh, thank fuck.
Well, because was that a thing before?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, well, yeah, now we're entering season 5, and, you know, they've got 40 episodes under their belt. But
yeah, it's just starting to become necessary.
It's kind of funny because whenever I watch him, I imagine the Mad Men song that plays, you know, that little, like, dun, 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 like, the little piano music that plays during their catch-up.
Previously?
Yeah, their previously
on. I love the weird, like, saw stinger that's like,
oh, yeah, that kind of shit. But
yeah,
I imagine
it's a
that
weird.
I imagine that in Game of Thrones. Someone should edit together Mad Men and Game of Thrones previously on.
Yeah.
Someone do it. If you're a listener that can edit, fucking do it, please. Well, in Game of Thrones, it's funny because their first episodes are never the strongest because it's always like reintroducing the status quo because some huge death happens and
like right at the end of the last episode.
Yeah, it's always the last two episodes where some shit happens. Red Wedding, this one you had the whole thing with Tywin and Tyrion and the wall.
Arya going to Braavos.
Yeah, and the wall and all that shit. And so, but something else that's I want to ask you, as someone who's read the book and the books, and have you read all the books?
No, this is starting to get to the point where I like need to read the fifth book again.
Well, because I've heard, and this, I guess, is where the adaptation part comes in, is that they're kind of going off the book and or spoiling stuff that Martin has planned.
No, they're delineating for sure.
Like, yeah.
Fucking Jojen wasn't supposed to die in that episode. Like, he goes with them to where the Three-Eyed Raven resides, and that old dude in the fucking chair that I forget who he was, but... Yeah, so it's starting to realize. A good friend of mine actually like pointed this out when he came over with his band trying to crash for a night, about how like if they delineate too hard, it's going to like ruin the books for him in a way, because it's just like, oh, now I realize that these characters aren't really going to be worth much of anything later.
Aren't going to be the characters. Well. To that, I would say, like, I don't know how much... I know you're not a huge anime person, but...
Oh, no, I am not.
But there's a show called Full Metal Alchemist. Have you ever heard of it?
Oh, I am definitely not a fan of that.
But I really like Full Metal Alchemist. It's a really cool show.
I did when I was a kid, but now I'm just like... God, what was I thinking?
No, it's good. Shut up.
No, you shut up. It's bad.
No, it's not. The original...
It is bad.
The original... Dude, it has super cool shit in it.
Sure. And it also is just a huge allegory for Nazism.
Well, but they're the bad guys.
When you're
furious.
Ishmael. Come on, dude. Ishmael. It's clearly fucking Israel.
It's not. No, it's Ishmael.
Yeah, but Ishmael is clearly Israel.
Well, obviously, that's the allegory here. Dude, it's an anime and manga that has not just, like, vaguely... Asian, vaguely white people in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's got, you know, people of color in it. They deal with stuff like, you know, disability and all that kind of shit. And
black people not looking like Amos and Andy cartoons.
Exactly. So for that, in that respect, you got to give it props for that.
Okay, I guess.
But what's interesting about that show is that there's two series. There's one where they started following the book and then they just kind of went on their own path.
Because what, Brotherhood?
No, Brotherhood is based completely on the manga because the manga was done. But in the original series, you know, filler is a big thing in anime because, you know, you have these ongoing stories and somehow and eventually the anime catches up to the manga that's going on. It happened with fucking...
I cannot stand filler. Well, I think that's what like really bothers me in anime. It's just like, well, so much of this is filler.
Well, and that's what's cool about like some shows like Cowboy Bebop, where Cowboy Bebop's not an adaptation, so it just has a straight up, like, it has a beginning, middle, and end. It doesn't have to adhere to any previously created series. But what I give a lot of props to with Full Metal Alchemist is that it started and then it really delineated and became its own thing. And I was just like, okay, we'll take elements and we might, you know, we'll work with the original manga creator to kind of, you know, make sure
like
that
he'll sit on the writing team, basically.
Basically, or at least be a consultant, but, you know, not to be bogged down so they don't get stupid filler. And because it's a 52-episode series, so it just goes, and it has its own ending. It has characters, but they're different and that kind of stuff. So it's like you have two different experiences going on. So, and then you have Brotherhood, which is just a straight adaptation of the manga. So you have these two very different things. And I actually enjoy the first series more because, you know, I was surprised by it. You know, like, I didn't know what was happening. But with Brotherhood, it's like, okay, I know what's happening. I've read the manga, whatever, you know?
Oh. So wait, Brotherhood is the manga? I thought the other one was the manga.
No, the earlier one. Brotherhood's the more recent one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and that's based on the manga.
Oh.
Because the manga wasn't finished until after the original show, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it was one of those things. But that's what this whole situation with Game of Thrones reminds me of, where it's like, you have the books, and now you're kind of reaching a point where they're delineating, and they're kind of doing their own thing, and maybe, you know, it's kind of like you have a straight path, but then you'll have, like, a detour that kind of goes around, but eventually you'll come back to the same path, you know?
Yeah.
Is kind of what this could be. And I'm fine with it. I mean, I haven't read the books. I know a lot of shit that's going to happen because I spoiled it for myself, not because I was like,
oh, did you really?
Yeah, but I wanted to. Like, I wanted to know more. So I was just like, fucking whatever. I want to know what happens to so and so. I knew what was going to happen to Oberyn, you know. And I was like, but Game of Thrones is good enough that spoilers don't bother me. It's different than a lot of other shows, you know. Like,
yeah,
like Daredevil would have pissed me off.
Oh no, there's some stuff in Daredevil that I'm just like clueless as to why they've done it.
What do you mean?
You finished, right?
Well, no, we'll get to it then. Okay. If it's going to be this whole big thing, but you know, I've spoiled stuff, so I know it's coming, but it's still enjoyable in seeing how they do it. You know, like I knew the Red Wedding was going to happen, but there's still like a sense of dread. It's almost worse, like knowing it's coming. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, okay. Okay, here we go. It's Red Wedding. And I've probably watched that episode at least 3 times.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, with the baby stabbing, which is why I think the show's Red Wedding is worse than the book's Red Wedding.
It is, because she lives, right?
No, there's no baby to speak of.
I know, but the Robb Stark's wife, or whatever her name was, she lives.
Because it's not Talisa.
Yeah, it's a different person.
It's Frey's daughter, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's more of a gut punch, I guess you could say.
No, it is a total, like, additional gut punch that when I saw it, I was like, fuck you guys.
You guys did that. Fucking D.B. Weiss and David Benioff. You guys.
Benioff. Or Boehner.
Like, what do you think of the second episode? Did that improve?
The second episode improved for me, like, dramatically, because now that I've been acclimated and my roommate just talking over the episode, saying shit like, where are there going to be dragons? And, like, are these old guys wizards? No, my roommate's just amazing in general, especially when it comes to just throwing retarded offhand comments of just pure beauty. But yeah, no, and I think the whole, who's the guy that Arya was talking to that gave her the coin and told her to go to Braavos again?
Oh, Jaqen.
Yeah, Jaqen. Having Jaqen come back and just being a fucking old elderly black guy. And then that Dolly pan,
oh, the pan,
where it goes from that dude to fucking Jaqen.
Editing.
That was amazing. That's not editing. That was kind of one shot kind of deals.
Then how did they get the guy in there?
Oh no, I mean it's a shot and an edit.
Yeah, it's a shot and edit.
Like, it's just doing the shot exactly the same.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the stuff I wish they taught you more in film school on as far as the cinematography level, because I know a lot of directors try to pull that shit and then like it doesn't work in the end. Like there was an Aya Macbeth shot that we tried to do kind of like that and it didn't work at all. So now it's just been cut entirely.
Right. But
if we knew how to do that better, we wouldn't have been wasting time on it in the first place.
Something else I want to bring up to you is what do you think works better in terms of, or I guess it could be just a matter of the medium it's in, but I know in the Thrones novels, it's very much it's different point of views, and it's like first person point of view narration with different characters, you know, jumping back and forth, like Sansa, Arya, Jon Snow, Cersei.
Well, I have a little editing project that I want to pull off one day, and that I want to do like fucking just different, or just like, you know, like line the stories back together just to see if it flows the same way or flows better, because that was the one thing I was talking about with my roommate who does not watch the show, which is why he makes all those offhand comments. It's just like, I feel like it would be a lot more digestible if everyone kind of like, you know, knew what was going on and if the stories were kind of all together. Or like lined up all together instead of like crisscrossing crazily.
Yeah, but there's
because that's I think what really lost me in that first episode until like when Mance is sent to die.
Yeah,
to the Lord of Light, and I think if I see it that way, like I will probably rewatch it that way rather than rewatching the show as it is.
Yeah,
because that's kind of hard to do after a certain point. Like, it's almost like rereading the books themselves. And then it's just like, okay, we're bouncing.
Well, and that's something.
Characters are coming into it that were in other storylines that are coming back into here. And it's just like, but it gets better as it goes along.
Well, and also you have the fact that, like, that's just kind of the nature, a necessary evil in this kind of show. Because I'm wondering if your editing, like, idea, like, how would that actually transition? Because it would probably present its own list of problems, right? You know, from like a pacing point of view and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I just thought it was, and you're right in that there are times where it can be a little bit draining having so many things going on. And now we're at a point where there's so many stories that we can't fit all of them in one episode. You know, yeah. Arya wasn't shown at all in the first episode of this new season, but she's a prominent part of this next one.
Well, because she's a prominent part in the fifth book, which is where I am starting to notice more and more of the fucking, like, this is what the writers have done, honestly, is that they've taken book three and made it into two seasons.
Yeah.
And then taking book four and five and then putting them together, because Feast for Crows is, like, very Cersei heavy and, like, very light on your favorite characters. Like, you don't get to see them much.
Well, there's also the Greyjoys, right?
Well, yeah, and they're, as the stinger for episode three showed, the Greyjoys are coming back.
Yeah.
As well as fucking Roos Bolton, that little shit.
Yeah. But
yeah, like, that is really going to be prominent, and that they were really prominent characters in Feast for Crows, but as you get into Dance with Dragons, they're not as prominent anymore because you got your favorite characters back for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because a lot of the fucking fans were complaining about it.
I can understand. And that was definitely something that I'm glad they dealt with. Because I remember talking to Shayla, because Shayla was reading the books. And she was reading, you know, Feast for Crows. And she was just like, yeah, it's
yeah, there's no Arya!
Yeah, basically. But, but yes, there wasn't, right? You know, like, the Five Kings War is done.
Yeah, the War of the Kings is kind of, like, done by season three.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So, or do you mean book three?
Book and season three.
Yeah.
Like, well, once Rob's out of the equation, it's just, like, really Stannis versus the Lannisters.
Yeah, but it's still going, man. And you got stuff with, like, Tywin. Like, there's definitely bits, like, they're just picking and choosing bits from both. The fourth and fifth novel to make.
Which is why I still think it works as a good adaptation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's just, you know, if you're a book reader, I'd say you might want to stop until Martin actually finishes the last book.
Well, and it's
which is still getting closer to when everyone's thinking. Like, everyone's thinking he's going to die beforehand. I'm like, no, he knows his time is coming, and he knows he doesn't want to be Robert Jordan'd.
Well, I believe he's quoted saying he wants the next book to come out in 2016.
No, yeah, that's...
So,
there you go. That's what everyone's expecting.
So, there you go. I mean, he's been releasing previews all the time.
Yeah, if you go on a site, which I don't know the link to, you will see previews. So, stop complaining. Like,
yeah. Oh, it's just people being like, I want more.
You know? I want more. I'm a fan of your work, and I want more.
But, anyway...
even though I don't like your version of Beauty and the Beast because as Sarah Connor with Hellboy. That's also true. And by the way, it's Linda Hamilton and Ron Perlman.
Oh yeah, I know that. Come on, man.
Beautiful.
But that's like another thing that you definitely have to consider when you're doing an adaptation is you have to pick and choose your battles in a sense.
No, you really do.
You have to pick and choose what you want to focus because, and one of the worst things about fandoms nowadays is that they're very like it's in everything from Game of Thrones to like Harry Potter to like fucking anything else
to Supernatural.
Well, it's just like, well, Supernatural's not an adaptation, but it's basically it's like, oh, this minute detail isn't like the book. Okay, like the Onion Knight have like being right-handed instead of left-handed or whatever. It's
oh
like,
my god, fuck off. At least he still couldn't read.
Because it's like, that's the thing about adapting something is that it doesn't, the minute details don't really matter in the most, in most cases.
They only matter to a select group of people.
Unless they're part of a bigger picture. Like, if there's, like, little details. Like keeping the stuff like Arya saying her lines over and over, like the names, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's part of her character. If it's part of her character, like, it doesn't fucking matter. And granted, this is a post I saw years ago that I don't even know if it was real or not, but still the point remains that there's probably people that believed it and agreed with it. But if it's something like if a character's right-handed or left-handed, you know, like, right. For example, if Jaime lost his other hand instead of...
Oh, yeah.
It's like, would it really matter?
Technically it would, because that wouldn't be his sword hand and he'd still be a pretty kick-ass fighter.
But you could change it so the hand he lost either way was a sword hand.
Yeah.
So it's not... Yeah, if he's, like, right-handed and you take away his left hand, yeah, he's still going to be a good fighter. But if he... I don't know which one...
If he's left-handed and you take away his left hand, then yeah, he's fucked.
And the same works for if you took away his right hand. It doesn't matter which one you take. It matters that...
You take the right one.
Well, not even that.
No, the right one to how you've written the character.
Well, yeah, and it's also... all that matters is the repercussions of it.
Yeah.
If they help to basically get to the same goal of the book.
Yeah,
you know, the goal is that, you know, Jaime loses a big part of his identity, his swordsmanship, and like the entirety of the first two episodes of season four, just, you know, Jaime having this like, you know, mental after everything.
Oh, I thought you meant the crisis of faith of just not having a sword hand or a proper hand to jerk off with.
Well, just that no one takes him seriously now, like Tywin, Joffrey, Cersei. No one takes him seriously. His family doesn't take him seriously, and he's not used to that, you know? And
he's used to kind of having the power in the family.
Yeah, because he's like
the pants, really.
I mean, he's fucking Prince Charming from the Shrek movies in the first couple seasons.
I still can't unsee it.
Well, it's totally true, man.
They cut his hair off. I still can't unsee it.
But
it's
yeah,
that armor he wears too. It looks too much like Prince Charming.
Yeah, and I think another part, and Casey and I talked a little bit about this in terms of, and that, this wasn't on mic anything, I don't think, but in regards to. Oh, we did a bit with Netflix, and we were talking about, and we can talk a bit about this with Daredevil, but in stuff like Game of Thrones, and I think with binge watching now, is that it's not so much about episodes, it's more about moments.
Yeah,
you know,
it's really about the moments.
And I think that's a product of adaptation where, you know, you don't remember, like, I don't know, like the episode equivalent in a movie. I guess it'd be a chapter. Like, you don't remember as much a chapter, but you remember a moment. You remember, you know, when Joffrey dies. But you may not remember every little, like,
everything
sentence
leading up to it. You just remember him, like, gurgling as he fucking dies.
Yeah. And the same thing happens with the show, because it's like, tell me what happens in, if I gave you almost any given episode of that show and asked you to summarize what happens in it, chances are you might remember like a few things, but not everything.
You really remember the moments they want you to remember.
Yeah.
Which is the same way the book goes.
You know, it's like, what else happened in the episode where Daenerys freed all the slaves and burned fucking Ben Kingsley looking dude with the dragons, you know, like, you remember that scene. Like, what else happened in that episode?
I don't remember.
Exactly. That's the point. But it's like, you take something like Mad Men or Breaking Bad, which are, you know, aired first on TV.
I still don't remember.
But there's still stuff like, I feel, maybe not you, but most people, like, I know Casey could summarize most of, like, Half Measure, Full Measure. Like, I remember episode titles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Beyond,
because you always used to like reference the episode titles.
Yeah.
When we did the fucking Geeks of College shows, and I would always be like, "Wait, what episode are you talking about?"
Well,
and to this day, speaking of that shit, I still haven't finished Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, you need to, dude.
I don't know if I need to, but I will. It's still high up on my docket.
Super good, man. I dug it. But anyway.
Anywho.
That's probably enough about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, let's segue it into Daredevil, because Daredevil is definitely interesting, and it is definitely like something that I have wanted since that fucking Ben Affleck movie came out.
Which are like, what's your stance on the Ben Affleck movie? Just
I love it because it's so goofy, but I don't really take it seriously.
So it's more of like an ironic...
especially when it tries to take itself seriously, I'm just like, nah.
So in like an ironic way, kind of like,
no, like it, in a, it's a bad movie, but I love it anyway.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, at least you acknowledge it's a bad movie. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, what have you seen the director's cut?
Yeah, I also acknowledge that mostly the same way, only I will watch that over the theatrical, like, any day of the week.
Yeah, because I keep seeing people say that it's like, oh, man, it, like, fixes all the problems, and it's like...
Yeah, it doesn't.
Not really.
There is a still glaring problem with that fucking, like, seesaw fight.
Well, the seesaw fight's just, like, I can't get it out of my head.
It's an interesting idea that is just... filmed too cheesily, and yeah, it's the other thing that my favorite bad movie podcast, How Did This Get Made, loves to bring up, is that like it feels like they choreographed and did all the fights like at 75% or whatever, and not at 100%, like super fast.
Yeah,
and they just rolled the rehearsals, and they're like, "Yeah, that looks pretty good. All right, guys, let's wrap it up for the day.
Wrap it up. There we go."
But here's what's fucked up: that seesaw fight took an entire day to shoot.
Jesus. Yeah, well, to me, it's more just
it's
like
a complete waste of time.
It's just kind of the goofy aspects of like the story, where it's like the seesaw fight would be so much better if it was just Elektra and Matt in like by themselves, maybe. Because yeah, when you think about it in the context kids. Of... Yeah, well, around other people where you have Elektra and she has to beat the shit out of this blind guy that everyone thinks is blind. So she's in like a lose-lose situation where if she wins, she can't really celebrate because she beat up a blind guy. But if she loses to a blind guy. So she's like, you know, fucked if you do, fucked if you don't kind of thing.
Yeah, but and that's what I really love about this new series is that, like, it takes what kind of worked and makes everything else that didn't work work. Like, when they go into a courtroom, it's not, you're not questioning why they're in a courtroom because a defense attorney is prosecuting a rapist.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing that I really liked about Daredevil is that I think it took both of the important aspects out of the comic, where it's not just Matt Murdock, superhero. It's Matt Murdock. He's also an attorney, you know, yeah. And that helps to drive the plot, as opposed to the movie where I feel like it was such an afterthought. It's like...
No, in the theatrical cut, it is absolutely 100% an afterthought because they took out the fucking important subplot.
Yeah.
That really would have tied all that in a lot better.
But I like how much of this is like a procedural. Like, they really embraced the crime fiction aspects of Daredevil.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like Law and Order or fucking NYPD Blue or ER.
Hey, at least ER, that's about fucking injuries, too.
But it's still procedural.
Kind of. But NYPD Blue is good, though.
Yeah, but I'd still think Daredevil was better than NYPD Blue.
Well, that's like, also
like
really
it's
weird.
It's not like really like bogged down by the procedural formula is really what I'm trying to get at.
Well,
like it's taking aspects of that and like taking it for a new or like what I would consider the new showrunner's formula for doing these kind of season long arcs rather than like year long arcs.
Right.
Because they shoot so many goddamn episodes for syndication. But that's a whole nother discussion.
Well, and it might be going back to, like, Hill Street Blues and L.A. Law, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So, and that... But those were also procedurals, but they also kind of helped... There wasn't really a formula for it yet. They helped to kind of establish one. They were the godfathers of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense. But yeah, so do you want to just give your overall thoughts on Daredevil?
My overall thoughts are I fucking love it. It's really amazing. When my non like comic book loving friends have watched it, I don't know their sensibilities, honestly. Like I try to like push their buttons on it every time and they still are just like weirded out by some things that I don't really notice. Like, they think the acting style is weird. I'm like, what?
What? Like, why did they expand on that?
Okay, my roommate in particular thinks that, like, when fucking young Matt Murdock in the opening of the pilot just goes, I can't see! He thinks it's really cheesy, and I'm like, bruh, he's losing his sight. Like,
he's a fucking kid yelling he can't see. Yeah. What else is he supposed to say?
What? How would you do it? Like,
yeah. I don't know. I feel like,
and I hate to use that defense, but it's when they say shit like that, I'm just like, I really can't help but say, like, no, seriously, how would you do this? Because what else is a kid of fucking like 8 years old going blind as his dad's like looking over him really supposed to say? Like,
well, exactly, because you look at
and
that,
it's also like, I just don't know what they want out of it.
Yeah.
As well. So I think a lot of factors honestly have been going into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you look at that scene, and it's like, how else, like, what are you going to do? You just have, like, that crane shot where you're zooming out,
yeah,
and he says nothing, you know? Because then you get kind of this weird dead air effect.
Yeah, no, you do.
You know, it's like, yeah, it probably kind of breaks the whole show-don't-tell rule, but, you know, it emphasizes it.
That he's blind.
That he's blind, because you kind of, because there's that effect, right, where it's like we're seeing from his point of view and his vision's going.
Yeah, and his vision's just fading. Like, maybe as far as my directorial thing, instead of going, I can't see, I'd maybe just be like, have him yell dad a lot.
Yeah, like dad, or like, where are you? Like, dad, where are you? Or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's, but still
just like, that is such a weird thing to fucking criticize.
Yeah, well, that's kind of how we are now, which is a shame. Like, we're so on, like, the little things. And just,
yeah,
like,
we're so overanalyzing everything.
Because, you know, you're not allowed to just like something nowadays.
Yeah, no, you really aren't.
But there's no middle ground also. It's always you hate it or you love it.
Yeah, and that's why I try to, I don't know, start establishing more of a middle ground, because I know I can be that kind of, like, way, especially when we used to review stuff on Geeks of College. I was always the love it or hate it guy.
Yeah, and I always try to, like, emphasize, you know, the middle ground. Like, there are flaws in everything, you know, but, you know, and sometimes those flaws are small enough that you don't even care.
Yeah.
Or they're still legitimate. Like, you know, when we talked about, like, the Babadook, you know, and I still think the Babadook's great, but there's still some stuff that I'm kind of like, eh.
Like the over... acting elements of it?
No, there's no overacting elements. I think the acting is really good. It's more just like little weird decisions, like some of the sound design they use, which I swear to God I've seen elsewhere on like YouTube comedy skits that like roar. It's like,
this is low budget nonsense.
I know it's low budget, but it's also like, oh, you could have done some other cool Foley for that, you know?
Yeah.
You can make Foley on the cheap. You really could. And just, I almost didn't want to see as much of the Babadook as they showed us.
Yeah.
Like, him crawling on the ceiling is, like, just a little too much, because it's just like, no, get out of here. I like you when you're like this
shit. Get out of here, y'all.
Because then you have my favorite shot of that movie where he's like, you know, she's looking into the kitchen, and he's just like a shape, and he's just moving, and he's got his hands. He's like, ksh, and like the hands come out. You know that one? And she's like, yeah, it's like, that's such an effective shot, because he's still like a mystery. Like, you don't see anything of him. He's a silhouette. It's fucking terrifying. It's awesome.
Yep.
It's kind of like, you know, It Follows that just came out, where we don't really see, and granted, I've only seen the trailer, but it seems like we don't ever really see the thing, the entity that's following her, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's really effective. It's like Jaws. It's the Jaws principle. Don't show until the last second, you know? So.
No, the Jaws principle is a very,
but
very good principle that more horror films, I think, are following now, which is awesome, because we're getting scared again.
I'm trying to think of, if I have any legit criticisms with Daredevil.
I don't think I do yet, and
I might have to rewatch it.
See a couple more pop up, but, like, honestly, like, the Kingpin episode,
oh,
holy
yes.
Goddamn Pittsburgher.
D'Onofrio,
so good.
D'Onofrio killed it. And what's cool about him is that he's like walking this weird line in his performance where it's like almost too, it's like just campy enough again, but it's still like really like intense and like intimidating
really
and creepy.
I think that's campy.
It's not even that it's campy, but there's like this like little bit of like how like it's his inflection.
Is awesome.
And
it scares the shit out of me.
He growls every time. It's just like, if this was done by like a worse actor, it would be like it would have been too much. Yeah, but I think he does the right amount of it.
Way too much.
Because to me, it walks that line. It's like, I don't know. It's hard to describe, but it's good. Like, he's great in it. I don't think, I've seen people say that he should get nominated for an Emmy, but.
I agree.
And it's like, well, but dude, everything needs to be like. There's a ton of shit that deserves to be.
I also think Charlie Cox needs to be nominated for an Emmy. Like, just that dude's incredible. Like,
yeah, but we live in a world where Mad Men has all these nominations and has never won an acting Emmy. Think about
that. Yeah, that's also true.
Think about that.
We're in a world where The Good Wife somehow gets away with it.
I don't know. I haven't seen The Good Wife, so whatever.
I haven't either, but I remember, okay, there's this really good, just speaking of like TV shows, on Netflix, go watch the documentary Showrunners. It really gives you a great insight into the world of what we're dawning into with this golden age of TV. And they interviewed the people from The Good Wife, and someone made some comment about like, oh, that's why The Good Wife is still allowed to get Emmys with these like basic cable shows, and because of the way the show's written.
Right.
But I still feel like it's really formulaic.
Well, but I mean, hey, at least look at it like this way. How many shows from, you know, the networks are actually nominated for Emmys nowadays? It's basically Modern Family and The Good Wife.
Yeah. You know?
So it's not
The Good Wife also being on CBS, which astonishes me.
Well, whatever.
That and Person of Interest, because Person of Interest is an Abrams show, and I never felt like CBS wanted to really do that Abrams formula.
No, yeah, well,
with fucking
whatever.
Jonathan Nolan of all writers.
Well, you know, with whatever works, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I can't think of anything really that stands out to me with Daredevil. I just had fun through the whole viewing. I mean,
I think it's just honestly some really kick-ass TV.
It's just really kick-ass TV. I mean, there might be some, you know, little writing issues here and there where it probably could have, you know, picked up a bit. But I guess I was so impressed by the fact that they actually took time in this series.
Yeah, because kinda... that's the other great thing comparing this one to fucking the Marvel movies, to the original Ben Affleck movie, is that just like the Daredevil books, like, or the comics, it takes its time, and it really works because it takes its time.
You know, and like you said, there's an episode that focuses almost entirely on Wilson Fisk, and it's awesome. Like, it's a really, yeah, really well done episode.
Or the episode where they focus entirely on Matt Murdock, where they intercut with him and Claire Temple. Yeah. I thought that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes in, holy shit.
And I like that they put in just enough Easter eggs, you know, like Gladiator is in there. He cameos.
Dude, Gladiator.
He cameos. Everyone's regular name is.
Dude,
but
in Gladiator, in Melvin Porter's fucking,
yeah,
like,
Melvin Porter.
In his suit shop, like, you can see Stiltman.
Yeah,
the
I see Stiltman. That was in like the last episode or something, I think. And I was just like, oh fuck, it's Stiltman.
Stiltman.
But
but no, I would like to give credit to Stephen S. DeKnight, honestly. Like, from a guy who I thought was like, wow, why are they hiring you? Like, you really must have impressed them some way.
Yeah.
Because if you've seen Spartacus, like, it is night and fucking day in comparison. Like,
well, there's a lot of subtlety in this show.
That is nowhere in Spartacus.
That's what I mean. Like, it's very subdued compared. And granted, you know, and I think if I were to actually have a legit criticism, maybe sometimes the violence is a little too much.
But like, I feel like it's warranted after all this, like,
it's warranted,
God, there's no blood in these Marvel movies. Like, how do we give a shit?
But,
and now we really give a shit.
Well, and it also just works for Daredevil more. He's a street level hero.
He's
not the guy that you have fight Thanos or some shit, you know, even though I think he was there in Infinity Gauntlet, but.
What, in the. In the Gauntlet run, or in the fucking images they've been putting out for Infinity
War. No. The original comic that it was like is like.
Oh, that is hilarious.
Like, I'm pretty sure he's there. Either he's there or he's like mentioned or something.
Yeah.
And just like, he shouldn't be there. He's Daredevil. Like,
fucking Daredevil.
He's not gonna fight fucking Loki and shit. You know, maybe like.
Although I would love to see him kick Loki's ass after seeing him fuck up the Kingpin at the end.
Yeah. And the fight choreography is.
No, the fight choreography, I think, is still the same people from the original Daredevil. It's just now they're like, you know, A, on a smaller budget, B, with a more streamlined vision, and C, the actors give a shit, so they're fighting at 100% speeds.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Like, that fucking hallway fight, dude.
The hallway fight. Well, also they have better directors.
Chinese guy singing.
Oh, that was great, too.
Well, I honestly, like, the directors they have aren't, you know, it really are not, like, the guys to really make those decisions.
Well, but also, really. I liked how they got, like, all these veteran people that have worked on, like, Game of Thrones. And
did they really?
Yeah, there was, like, a bunch of people that have, like, worked on, like, everything from 24, which, say what you will about 24. 24, I could imagine being a really tough...
24 is a complicated production, so it...
Yeah, so, like, to be able to direct an episode of 24... knows that you can, you know, stay cool under pressure and shit like that.
Yeah.
And, like, everything from, like, fucking Burn Notice to The X-Files to Stargate to, like, it's, like, this huge, like, filmography resume for all this.
It's a nice net of people.
Exactly.
Like, working on a really singular vision that The Knight has put on the show. Like,
and even Sopranos, with
Drew Goddard,
too.
Like, Drew would have been awesome, but, like... The Knight having done more of the fucking show running than Drew Goddard has, like, I feel has really unified his vision.
Mm-hmm. But, and like, there's definitely decisions that I liked. I liked how, like, you know, you had Rosario Dawson's character. I guess you could say she was a love interest, but...
No, she is a love interest. If he's fucked her, she's a love interest. That is the Daredevil principle.
Yeah, but, like, at the same time, she's not, like, a love... Like, she does more...
Yeah, she'll do more. And, like, Karen Page is, like, they're going to build that shit up from what I could tell.
But I liked how the actual romantic arc was Wilson's, you know, with his wife. I forget what her name is. Vanessa. Yeah, Vanessa. Yeah,
dude, like, she is smoking, by the way.
I thought that was just such a great creative decision. It's like, okay, let's kind of turn this on its head and have the actual romantic subplot be with the villain. And not the two, like, not the main characters, not the good guys.
Because everyone knows that Daredevil is, like, fucking a bigger ladies' man than, like, Ollie Queen. So, like, and Tony Stark, like, put together.
Yeah,
so,
but then all of his love interests die.
Also, just speaking of Foggy, like, oh my god, was he on point. Like,
oh yeah, I love the guy that played Foggy, Elden Henson.
Honestly, like the fucking moment where he's like, yeah, like, all he has to do really is, like, touch their face and... And they're done.
I don't know. Like, I've seen that people that don't like Foggy in the show, and I'm like,
are you fucking kidding me?
Like, I feel like we're so good. we're so, like, cynical about comic relief characters that, like, anything
it's
that's
like perfect though.
But let me finish. Like, anything, even if it's like good, but it's like we just have like an automatic like gag reflex in a way to any sort of like he's the fucking sidekick. Because, I mean, Foggy Nelson is one of the most, like, you know, known Marvel sidekicks, really.
No, he is. Like,
next to maybe, I don't know, Rhodey or something. I mean, but Rhodey's not even really a sidekick. He's his own guy, but...
Rhodey's his own guy. Like, Foggy Nelson is, like, the Marvel sidekick to end Marvel sidekicks.
Exactly. But, yeah, it's really solid. I like... The character arcs that go on, like, you know that Matt has, like, he has conflict within himself, dealing with his anger and this kind of chip on his shoulder and about everything that's happened in his life and how he's afraid of what he might do and the whole devil and thing and how he embraces it at the end. It becomes Daredevil. So I loved Ben Urich. I thought he was great. I was sad when he was killed.
No, that's what I was going to say. It's because, like, Ben Urich is really important to Daredevil. Like,
yeah, it was ballsy of them to kill him. Like, that's another adaptation choice.
As well as killing, like, fucking other characters.
Yeah, like a lot of people fucking died
like,
in the show.
Like Leland Orser is, you know, in the comics, the owl.
Yeah.
And I feel like his he kept mentioning his fucking son, Lee. And I feel like Lee's going to come in and be the owl.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
But what's so great about the Ben Urich stuff is that it's like they made an executive decision like, okay, we understand how important Ben Urich is. But, you know, it's like when I know Neil has said this on a number of occasions. Don't ever let a good character get in the way of a good story. Like your love of a character get in the way of a good story. You know,
yeah.
It's kind of the Game of Thrones principle. It's like there's it's tons just, of.
I really hope that they get around to do the framed storyline because that was the other thing. Like fucking Foggy finding out that Matt's Daredevil.
Yeah,
is kind of going to impede if they ever do framed.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, for those listening, Framed is the first part of the Brian Michael Bendis run where Daredevil's outed by the media.
Yeah.
But I feel like there will be a Ben Urich-like character, not called Ben Urich, now that, you know, Marvel has control over things like the Daily Bugle that will basically fill in the role when the Daily Bugle's introduced in Daredevil Season 2 or whatever.
Yeah, because there was, like, the New York Bulletin, but they couldn't use Bugle because of rights or whatever. But does this make you excited for AKA Jessica Jones?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of confused as to the tone of what AKA Jessica Jones will be.
Yeah, like, if it will
but
be the same.
But it definitely psychs me the hell up for Iron Fist and Luke Cage. Like,
yeah.
I was pumped for those, but now I'm just like, bruh.
Well,
I still think Terry Crews should be Luke Cage, though. Like, Mike Coulter has some work to do.
Well, yeah, but that's just because of what Terry Crews has done elsewhere, you know?
Yeah, but Terry Crews is just like, you see him, and you're just like waiting for him to just say Sweet Christmas, like, every word.
Well, but you never know. I mean, we'll see.
Because, yeah, if Coulter nails Sweet Christmas, like, I'll be sold.
There you go. And I think that's just what makes Daredevil like such a really, really solid adaptation is that it keeps a lot of the spirit, and that's what really comes down to it when you're adapting something.
Yeah, as long as the spirit is maintained and held, then you know you have not necessarily carte blanche, but you have your creative freedom to do what you will.
Yeah, and like this one, like Daredevil's not based on any specific storyline, right?
No, it's kind of like Nolan's Batman, where it's taking in from a bunch of areas.
Picking and choosing, yeah.
Yeah.
Like how, you had Winter Soldier for Winter Soldier, but it doesn't do the whole thing, but it incorporates it into,
Like how they lazily try to incorporate Demon in a Bottle in Iron Man 2.
Yeah, kind of. But, yeah.
Anyway, this is better.
Now let me
it's
ask
definitely
you,
better.
Now let me ask you this to kind of wrap up the adaptation discussion. Is there anything that, like, do you have, like, a dream adaptation project of your own?
Well, Daredevil was one.
Daredevil was one.
Like, doing it straight and solid would be one. But now I'm starting to, like, read Nightwing heavily.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to take on Dick Grayson, like full on, like, do Bloodhaven and shit like that. Hawkworld I've read recently, that'd also be a really cool one, but one that I really would love to do is to tackle Conan the Barbarian, but more like Robert E. Howard's actual style. Because
mm-hmm.
Say what you will about the Jason Momoa film, they were way closer to anything that fucking Robert E. Howard wrote than the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. Like, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, just like, we have the character, let's just do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yeah, that first film is amazing, but like, it's still not really Conan. It's just like what John Milius' ideas of Conan are.
Right.
And I would like to do one that's more faithful to Robert E. Howard's stories, like basically taking Red Nails and making that a film and kind of taking that script that they were going to do for King Conan, Crown of Iron, and like doing that as the last definitive Conan story.
Right.
Because I think that would be sweet.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be so sweet.
Yep.
But, yeah, as far as that is concerned, on the other end of adaptations, going back to that whole Batman versus Superman thing, like, I feel like that's how you don't really do an adaptation, because it's starting to become very clear to most people that this is like the Dark Knight Returns, but for the DC Cinematic Universe. And that is just like so wrong.
Like, what sucks about that is because...
Well, no, just as to make a cinematic universe from an Elseworlds title, it's just, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, from such a... Yeah.
Yeah, because it's just like, this is so specific to something, and trying to make it like the way of the universe is not really a good idea. Like,
and another problem that stems from it is that, and people kind of forget this, I guess, or people are just so, like, not anti-Superman, but just so, like, whatever about him that they don't realize how or care about how anti-Superman The Dark Knight Returns is.
No, they don't. As well as I see a lot of the people who like these, the DC movies currently, and they're also really not Superman fans. And it's just like, wow, then, yeah, this is really all catered to you.
Yeah. And it sucks for me as someone who likes Superman. Like, I want Superman.
Me too.
It's like, I want Superman to have his due too. Batman has had his moment to shine. Moments.
Like, for years now.
Well, I pointed out in that whole discussion I had on Facebook with friends, it's like, in the last 26 years, Batman has had 7 movies, I believe. That's just a few less than James Bond, to put that in perspective. Think about that. Which crosses over 3 different James Bond actors. And how many Batman actors? Like now, like 5?
7.
Well, it's like 5 now. Because you had Keaton, you had Kilmer.
Including Adam West?
No, that was like a while ago. I'm talking about...
Oh, from the 26 years.
26 years thing. You know, it's like you had...
Keaton, Clooney, Val Kilmer, Christian Bale.
And now Ben Affleck. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, now you're right. You're totally right.
But it's just adding to that whole, like, overexposure of Batman. It's like, just give him a break. And I get it. He makes more money for them. He makes the money for him. That's why Nintendo makes so many Pokemon games, you know? But they're still good, you know? That's the thing. And this one, it's like, the quality isn't as much of a guarantee, in a way. And it's just... I don't want in what I guess isn't Man of Steel 2, because we're going to get a Man of Steel 2, but the follow-up to Man of Steel to be so seemingly anti-Superman, you know? Because it just feels like, oh, here's just another excuse to have Batman kick the shit out of Superman, which shouldn't be happening, you know?
Like, really.
So, we'll see.
Like, I think the greatest Justice League adaptation... is fucking Bruce Timm's Justice League.
Like, oh yeah, dude, Justice League and Justice League Unlimited are fantastic.
That episode where they all get together is like really what that movie should be. Like, it shouldn't be this like mishmashed amalgamation bullshit. But yeah, like this is, I guess it's just gonna be what it is, and I'm not really gonna go see it, honestly.
I'll probably like, still see it.
No, like, I have not really talked too much shit on it, but it's just, like, I really don't care if this is what they're going to try and do. Like,
yeah.
It's, like, I might sneak into it, but I would... It's basically Casey's fucking, like, thing on Prometheus. It's just, like, yeah, I saw this movie. I have never paid to see it, but I've seen this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll see. I don't know. I might end up seeing it. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's a little less than a year away, so whatever.
Yeah.
But anywho, I think that should probably wrap it up, right?
Yeah, except for just, like, I don't know. There's something I kind of want to address really quickly. It's just more of, like, when I feel like more people just really need to be cautious of what they say about upcoming films when they come out. Because it's always just like, and yeah, we did this ourselves right now, but you never really fucking know. Like, the one rule of thumb that our sight runners used to love to say on some old stuff back in the day was that nothing's really set in stone until they're actually on set in production. Like, and, you know, say what you will about whatever you want to think about these comic book movies and these adaptations of things you love, but like, you really never know, and you should always try to go in with an open mind and really get away from the minutia of everything, because I'm really starting to get sick of a lot of this, like, reactionary culture nonsense. And just the whole idea that our pop culture is now our culture, like, it just feels so, like, contrived and devoid of, like, any real humanity to me. And that's what, like, my friends who aren't really comic book fans, that's what they gripe over. It's just, like, they really can't relate to it. So it's, like, they don't really know why this is working. And they're trying to work in some parts of this industry. And yet this is what's popular, and they just don't understand it. And I certainly now understand that kind of frustration, to be honest with you.
Well, and now we're getting to a point where, and I've mentioned this a few times, I've seen other people mention it too, is just, there's going to come a point where I think the superhero, like, genre is just going to kind of bust. There's going to be, like, a boom. Like, we're in the boom, there's going to be a crash, you know?
Well, it's going to crash like the stock market crashing.
Yeah.
It's just, there's such a glut of them that it's like, wow, there's, like, nothing else going on, really? This is all we have going for us in filmmaking? Like,
well, you know, you have other stuff, too. I mean, there's plenty of other good, like, movies that aren't
it's
that.
It's just
but
not really, like, coming to the forefront, really. Like,
yeah. And
like,
I guess
you have to actively look for it, is what I'm trying to say.
And I guess to kind of bring it full circle is that, you know, to bring it back to adaptations, is, like, so much of everything now is adaptations of anything, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what sells, is knowing, it's like having this thing that we know from some other media and seeing it in another form. Yeah. And, you know, you look at stuff like the Harry Potter movies, even James Bond, you know, James Bond's technically an adaptation.
Yeah,
in most cases.
The newer films, I'm kind of glad they're just doing their own thing now.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Casino Royale still took plenty of elements from the book.
The original Casino Royale.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, after that, it's kind of now becoming
something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, yeah.
And technically, you know, Pierce Brosnan's movies were all technically originals.
Yeah, not books.
But that's because there's only so many books. I think there might be more books. There might be more movies than books at this point, probably.
I mean, I remember they were, like, going into the short story territory of like, places to mine stories for new Bond films.
We're just kind of getting to this point where, and I think for a lot of people we're already there, but just, like, this huge, I guess, what was it, like, fatigue from adaptations of everything under the sun.
Like,
you know, Transformers, now we're getting a Gem thing, just to kind of deal with, like, using, like, kind of manipulating through nostalgia in a way.
Because if this year will prove anything, it will prove what the next 10 years of Hollywood's going to look like.
Well, and you already have the fact that box office numbers were down last year. They'll probably be up this year because you got Avengers 2 coming out.
Yeah.
And Star Wars. So you got some big
stuff. Those are two big old money makers.
Yeah, so those are going to be your two biggest money makers. And that'll probably see a rise, but, you know, how long can that last? And, you know, hey, as long as Marvel can keep the quality up, which they have, as in my opinion, to where it is, like, even if they stumble a little bit, you know, the next thing is already better. So, and it's like, look at Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, I know a lot of people that were like, I was kind of done. Then Guardians came out and it's like, oh my God. You know, everyone said that
I've talked to on
it
Guardians.
Was like an adrenaline. It was like an adrenaline shot to the leg. You know,
yeah.
And I think Avengers 2 might do that too, and hopefully Ant-Man does that. I hope Ant-Man ends up being this year's Guardians of the Galaxy because it's something new and different.
Yeah,
you know, and well, not new, but like something different.
Something different,
like helping to separate, you know, kind of Marvel and DC, you know. DC's kind of doing the grimdark thing, even though
their TV shows are, like, not doing that at all.
Yeah, like, I kind of wish their movies were a bit more like The Flash, you know? It's like, come on, guys. It's like,
no, I wish their Flash movie was just with Grant Gustin, honestly. Like,
yeah,
I don't really like most of that Flash show, but I think Grant works
mm-hmm.
as far as just him playing Barry Allen.
Yeah. So I guess that's where we're at right now. Is like,
yeah,
we're still
it's
in
just
this
like, try to keep an open mind. Don't really go after stuff on the internet. Like,
well, that's just a product of the fact that like you have Marvel fanboys. It's a continuation of the Marvel versus DC thing that's been around for decades.
Oh, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about like, don't go actively looking for to just be spoiled because you're excited over something. Like,
yeah,
just go and wait and see it when it comes out. Like, people have been doing that for centuries now. Like,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure we'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, that's really, you know, me being jaded.
You jaded, cynical bastard, you.
I'm a jaded, cynical, green bastard.
You Grinch, you.
I am. You're a mean one,
Mr. Grinch.
So, I guess that wraps it up then, good sir. So,
before I start going on that full song.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Let's not do that.
Alrighty, so once again, another Geeks at Large in the bag. So thank you for joining me, Chris.
Yeah,
for this,
no problem.
This awesome discussion, and we'll try and figure out what our next episode will be. But
yeah,
hopefully you have enjoyed listening to us, fair listeners. And
until we return again.
Yeah, be sure to like us on Facebook, and it's Geeks at College still, but it's going to change. Okay.
It will hopefully change. Yeah.
Yeah, eventually, I'm even considering maybe making a Twitter just to put up episodes.
No, that'd be a good idea.
You know,
that'd be a good idea.
Cause so far it's just me putting them up, but you know, and if people want to ask us questions or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. We should start doing something fan related.
You know, so like
if
us on
we
Facebook.
Even have fans.
Yeah. Well, you know, and comment on the post on one of us. Let us your thoughts. Like, give us your thoughts on these adaptations.
Discus
other adaptations.
Is your friend, you guys.
Yeah, it is. And you know, tell all your friends. Circulate the links. So.
Yes,
yeah.
Please.
And with that, we say we don't have a catchphrase yet.
Oh, I was just gonna say until we round up again from being at large.
From being at large.
From being at large.